morning. I now call the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Lead Swazinski.
Here.
Representative Bierman will be late. Representative Bo.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson. Representative Franson. Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Representative Igo.
Igo present.
Representative Lee. Representative Lee. Representative Lippert.
Lippert present.
Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard present.
Representative Mecklen.
Mecklen present.
Representative Munson.
Munson present.
Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson.
Present.
All right, a quorum is present, and I do see Representative Franzen is on, and looks like she's trying to connect to audio. Members, the first item on our agenda today is to hear a presentation from Xcel Energy on their integrated resource plan, which is in the final stages at the Public Utilities Commission. And so today we have Farah Mandage from Xcel Energy. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Farah Mandage, and I'm the Director of Resource Planning for Xcel Energy's Upper Midwest Service Area. So I'm just going to share my screen if you can bear with me for 1 second here. And hopefully you'll be able to see that in just a second.
We can.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much again for the opportunity to speak to you today about our integrated resource plan. In this presentation, I'd like to give you an overview of what a resource plan is and how we conduct this process, the highlights of the plan that we proposed, an overview of the specific plan elements the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission recently approved, and then what happens next as we look forward to achieving on the MPUC's order and planning for our next IRP. So a little bit about what an IRP is and how we conduct this process. So an IRP is essentially our future roadmap for what type of generation resources we're going to use to serve our customers. It covers 15 years, with the first 5 years being what we typically focus on for immediate action, and then the next 10 years are generally more directional. And as I said, you know, my role is resource planning for the whole Upper Midwest system. So that covers all five states that we have customers in this region. We file a plan every 2 to 3 years. So we have a new chance to reevaluate our plans and check in with our regulators on a path forward on that cadence. And really what our process is doing is we're conducting economic modeling to assess the size, type, and timing of least cost resource sets, generation resource sets that can serve customer needs going forward. So when we do that planning process, our overarching goal really is to balance four core planning objectives. The first is cost. Cost is a primary factor we're balancing. Everything we do in planning is examined through a lens of a potential plan's future costs relative to a business as usual case or other potential plans. And this really helps us ensure that we are keeping customer bills as low as practicable. We're also planning to meet environmental goals, both policy and regulatory requirements that we that may have been set for us, and then as well as our own carbon reduction goals. So in this case, we wanted to find a plan that would allow us to reduce our carbon emissions by at least 80% relative to 2005 levels by 2030 in accordance with our goals. Reliability is another core planning objective. Reliability is really a table stakes for a utility. We have to be able to ensure that we have enough resources on our system to meet customer needs every hour of every day, and also to meet our resource adequacy obligations at MISO for the regional system. And then finally, we examine risk mitigation. And this is somewhat related to reliability, but it's a little bit different in the sense that here we're working to manage our market exposure and manage portfolio diversity to the benefit of our customers. So one example of this would be looking at various sensitivities around commodity prices, customer demand, and other factors to see if our plans are beneficial across a wide range of futures. So in our planning process, we take into account a variety of inputs then. So stakeholder input and feedback is a core thing we consider. We're examining what our customers need and also the resources that they choose to employ at their sites. So for example, if they adopt energy efficiency on their site or solar, rooftop solar, that would affect how much energy and capacity we need to plan for. We examine resource technology costs and operating capabilities, both what's on our system already and what would be available for us to add as a new resource, really recognizing that each different resource brings a different set of attributes to our system that can work well together. And then compliance with policy and regulatory requirements and other factors are also very important. And so we put together all of those inputs. We do a lot of internal coordination to make sure that everybody internally is on the same page. And then we run that economic model I described that simulates our system's operations and costs over 15 years. And really what it's doing then is selecting a portfolio of incremental resources that we need to meet customer needs in the least cost fashion. So in this resource plan, we actually modeled 15 core scenarios that differed in retirement dates of our coal and nuclear units, basically to examine which of those plans would be the most favorable for customers. And so after we vet these portfolios internally, we select a preferred plan and develop a filing to the MPUC that explains how we arrived at the plan, along with several other compliance requirements that we need to include. And then after the plan is submitted, stakeholders consider our plans, they ask us questions, they sometimes do their own modeling and then offer comments on our plan. And then at the end of that process, we have a hearing where the MPUC considers all of the input and makes a decision on what we should implement over the next, 5 to 10 years, recognizing that we will reevaluate the latter year decisions in our next IRP. So now that we've discussed a little bit about how the plan is developed, we can talk about what our plan actually includes. So at a high level, there are four key components. The first is closing our coal plants a decade ahead of schedule while providing a reasonable off-ramp to ensure reliability and transition our workforce. And this plan that we just filed proposed to close the King coal plant in 2028 and the Sherco 3 plant in 2030. The next pillar of our plan includes adding substantial amounts of renewables to our system. Our plan proposes to add approximately 5,800 megawatts of renewables through 2034. And by 2030, more than half of our energy will come from these resources. The third pillar is continuing to operate our 24/7 carbon-free nuclear units. This plan maintains reliance on carbon-free and reliable nuclear energy by extending the life of our Monticello plant out to 2040. And then finally, we're enabling a carbon-free future by including firm dispatchable generation units that we believe are essential to maintaining the reliability and stability of our system while ensuring we can integrate high levels of renewables onto our grid. In our plan, these units are CTs, they're combustion turbines that run on gas, which are available to ramp up and operate for long periods of time if renewable availability on our system is low. And we also envision them being able to run on lower carbon or carbon-free fuels in the future. And then in addition to these four pillars, we are also working on expanding our successful energy efficiency programs and demand response programs to help lower overall energy and load during those peak demand times. So in terms of what our plan achieves on an environmental basis, we can see here that, our system energy mix is already quite clean. We already get 62% of our energy from carbon-free resources. But by 2030, we're envisioning that this would increase to over 80% as we retire our coal, add more renewables, and maintain our nuclear generation. Observed another way, we can see that our plan significantly reduces the emissions relative on our system relative to 2005 baseline levels, achieving over 85% carbon reduction by 2030. And this plan, we believe, puts us on a really great path to achieve not only our 2030 goals, but also our ultimate 2050 goal of being 100% carbon free. sorry, before I move ahead here, I did want to reiterate one important point. Although we don't really discuss it on this slide, it's really important to keep in mind that we're always examining portfolios through an economic lens and balancing environmental goals with cost, reliability, and risk mitigation. So I really want to emphasize here that the plan that underlies this carbon reduction trajectory achieves our goals at a lower cost in the long run than our business as usual plan, both when considering the impact of environmental externalities and in cases where those externalities are not factored in. Okay, so now I'd like to talk a little bit about the MPUC's recent decision approving our plan with some modifications and additional requirements. So as I mentioned previously, we started this process in 2018 with nearly 15 stakeholder workshops. We had over 1,000 discovery requests, and there were approximately 8,000 or more public comments in the docket. So this was a very well participated in docket. At the end of January and early February, the MPUC held hearings and then issued their decision that adopted many of the recommended decision points that we worked together with clean energy organizations and labor groups to develop. Some key elements of the plan are first that the plan, the order did approve our Monticello nuclear unit extension to 2040. I do wanna note here though that there are still subsequent regulatory proceedings that will have to play out both relative to this extension and basically everything else in the plan. So relative to the nuclear plant, that would include an MPUC regulatory process to consider expanding the spent fuel storage on the site, and then also obtaining a license renewal from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The next point that they approved was retiring all of our coal plants by 2030, while requiring that we continue to work with stakeholders and the host communities of all these plants and account for workforce transition. Part of the coal site transition that we're considering is there was approval to build two new transmission lines that go out from the Sherco and King site to allow us to reuse the valuable MISO interconnection rights for new resources. And then both of these lines also will undergo additional regulatory proceedings and approvals in the years to come. So our plan adds significant renewable resources as we proposed, including doubling our solar resources by 2026. And then many of the new wind and solar and storage resources indicated here would be placed on the transmission lines that I mentioned that reutilize the interconnection rights from Sherco and King. Importantly, the commission also recognized the need for firm dispatchable resources that will help keep our system reliable. Currently, we're planning to locate these resources in North Dakota and Southern Minnesota, but we'll have additional regulatory proceedings to determine both the best technology type and location for that capacity. There's also direction in the order regarding the resource acquisition processes that we will use to acquire these new resources that I highlighted. And those are really, those requirements are really targeted at ensuring fair and competitive bidding, and that the best technologies to fit the needs of the system will be evaluated. And then finally, I will mention that the MPUC is requiring significant stakeholder efforts to continue ahead of our next IRP. And that includes aspects such as vetting our modeling inputs, working with host communities, labor and workers, and then considering environmental justice and equity as well. So what comes next? The MPUC, we have a verbal order from the MPUC, but the MPUC will issue its written order in the coming weeks. And then we will initiate several new regulatory processes around the renewable additions, the transmission lines, and the firm dispatchable resources that were approved in the order. And then we'll also establish several stakeholder working groups and begin work towards our next IRP filing, which is due on February 1st of 2024. And with that, I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about our IRP, and I'm happy to take any questions as time permits.
Thank you so much, Ms. Manage, for the presentation. And I have two questions. First, I just want to start by congratulating Xcel on a really collaborative process. And it's not easy, I know, to get agreement from that broader group of stakeholders on the plan. And this is a really impressive result. So congratulations. The first question I have is, you mentioned the that cost was a huge factor in making these determinations. And obviously with the retirement of Sherco 3 in particular, Xcel was facing a pretty big decision about what to replace that with. And you mentioned that the underlying plan, even without taking externalities into account, was the lowest cost option. And I was just wondering if you could expand on that a little bit in terms of looking at the possibility of a baseload gas plant versus the solar and storage approach that you took and how that those costs compared.
Sure. Yeah, happy to address that. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. So when we do our modeling, we're really examining, it's sort of a big cost benefit analysis. So we would examine a plan that is, business as usual with all the current retirement dates. We examined a plan that included a large CC at the the Sherco site, which was included in our original plan. And then we examined this sort of alternate path where we would develop these transmission lines to access low-cost renewables in other parts of the state. And so when we take all those costs into account, and compared the plans and their costs out through, the planning period, we did really see that that third option, that reutilizing the interconnection rights to bring those renewables on the system through the existing interconnection, was the least cost option of the three. And that's true both when sort of taking into account externalities, so carbon emission externality pricing, but also when we don't take that into account, when we're just kind of examining the pure costs of what we project those resources and the transmission lines to cost us. So we did, take all of those things into account, and we chose what we felt was the least cost and reliable plan going forward.
Thank you, that's helpful. And so for the build out for the transmission lines and the solar resources, do you have a sense for what the timeline is for that approval process and that construction?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So in terms of, there's two chunks that we would talk about. That there's a pretty significant amount of solar capacity that was indicated to come online by 2026. And so we're already starting to develop the RFP process for that. And those would be some of those resources would reutilize interconnection rights, and some of them would be kind of just more anywhere on the system. And then the transmission lines, because those take a little bit of time to kind of go through the regulatory process, plan the route, and do all of those kinds of things, we would envision those coming online with the associated generation resources that will be on those lines kind of in the post 2026 timeframe. So those all come online kind of in chunks from 26 to about 2032.
Thank you. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Yeah, a couple questions also. Recently, if I remember right, Xcel requested a 22% increase in their rates. Just wondering, is a lot of that due to so-called clean energy, which I refer to as dirty energy, because of the environmental consequences of cleaning it up? This is creating a lot of heartburn among my fixed income and low income people. I don't think it's been approved yet, as far as I know. But can you give me a breakdown of why they're requesting a 22% increase on their electricity rates?
Ms. Mandich, if you know the answer to that, or I'm happy to go to Mr. Evans if you'd prefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually would prefer to have Mr. Evans weigh in on that.
Okay. Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative, for the question. The drivers of our rate case are varied. And so what I'm going to ask is a little leeway here, and I can get you the chart that kind of shows what contributed to the rate increase that we asked for. And I don't have that available to show you right now, but I will get a hold of that, and we'll be able to lay that out. What I can tell you is that it is not primarily driven by the acquisition of renewable energy. It is driven by a lot of costs on our system, a lot of it being transmission costs on our system. I probably should quit talking because I'll say something that, you know, isn't borne out by the piece of paper I'm going to get you. But it's an excellent question, and I will make sure that all the committee members get the answer very shortly.
Happy to pass it around, Mr. Evans. And I'll know we're here to talk about the resource plan, so that's what Ms. Mandich is prepared to talk to today. But she did mention that this is the least cost resource plan, so I think you can rest assured, Representative Grunhagen, that of the options considered, this was the least cost. Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for that response, and I'll look forward to that sheet. Thanks for providing that. The other thing is, I did appreciate her presentation about considering the cost, but it's hard for me to understand how we're going to be competitive when the PUC and Commerce Department artificially inflate the price of solar gardens on our insureds, and from about 4 cents, this was last year, per kilowatt hour, up to almost 12 cents a kilowatt hour. By artificially inflating it, they're creating energy poverty out here. And is there going to be any modification as far as the inflated price of the electricity from solar gardens in your plan?
Representative Grunhagen, we're going to have an entire hearing on community solar, I can assure you, before the end of the session. So you'll have lots of chance to ask questions about the community solar program.
Okay, well, I'm just wondering, she, you know, in her presentation, she talked about solar and being cost effective. That's one of the quickest ways to become cost effective, actually charging what it costs rather than artificially inflating the price. And I'm just wondering, in their plan, is there anything to address this artificially inflated price on solar gardens?
Ms. Mandich.
Chair Long, Representative, thank you for the question. We do account for the cost of solar in our plan. The solar that we included, you know, the plan to expand solar capacity significantly in our plan was really discussing utility scale solar. That would be cost allocated, you know, recover those costs from all customers. And so while we take into account the cost of solar gardens, really what we're talking about here is large scale solar.
Thanks, Ms. Mandich. Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my question is pretty quick here. And, you know, it came out of your last slide there, Ms. Mandich. So, you know, when we're talking about IRPs, I like to, you know, we think about our ratepayers, right? Because those are the people that are playing into this. And my question is, you know, you mentioned environmental justice and environmental equity. Are the ratepayers on board for, you know, you talked about building out over 4,000 megawatts of wind and solar. Obviously, we don't have any capacity here in the United States to acquire those minerals and resources. So they're going to come from around the globe. You know, do we have, has Xcel Energy looked into what that impact's going to be for that carbon footprint, as well as the lives you're going to put at risk and the environmental destruction that will happen around the world, since we don't have a responsibly sourced pipeline or supply chain of critical minerals here in the United States?
Ms. Mandich, I'm not sure if that's in your area of expertise, or looks like Mr. Evans is prepared to speak to that.
Well, I appreciate the question, and it's one that I think the entire industry is struggling with. You know, these resources do require other natural resources, as you point out. I think what, you know, when we do our resource planning, we are looking at the price that we're seeing in the market and that we predict in the market going forward. Ms. Mandich can expand on that a little more, but that's one of the reasons we go back every 2 or 3 years and do it over again, is because things change. The price of gas changes, price of coal changes, carbon taxes could change, all kinds of things could change, which is why we keep on going back and doing it. So we are looking at the source of the resources that will build the solar and the wind power generation, but we're also looking at the price that we can see right now. And so it wouldn't surprise me if the price of solar increased as resources became more scarce, and we'll be able to take that into account as we look at future resources, but they may not. You know, none of us can predict the future. So it's a concern. It's something we look at. But when we're doing our resource planning, we're really looking at the price that the energy is costing us as we can predict it today. I see Ms. Mandich nodding. So in my own way, I've stumbled on the right answer. So thank you.
I'll just note that Xcel CEO has described that the energy transition is moving from fuel to steel. So certainly a lot of opportunities for Northern Minnesota job creation. Representative Igo, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I just want to follow. And my question, like you said, and thank you, Mr. Evans, you talked about the cost, right? But in the presentation, you talked specifically about environmental justice and equity. So that there was no answer to that question about we're talking about, you know, marginalized communities around the globe that will be supplying this for the IRP. So I just want to make sure ratepayers are aware, you know, when they're going forward with this plan, you're subjugating, you know, thousands, if not tens of thousands of people and destroying the environment around the world. That needs to be talked about, and ratepayers need to know about that as we move forward with plans.
Representative Swasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I think Representative Igo, I'll answer that question. You know, the answer and the solution to the higher rates communities with the racial equity and the rest is to have government subsidies pick up the tab. And so we're going to see up higher and higher rates, and we're going to see more and more bills coming in to help subsidize the cost so that those voter bases aren't affected by these policies. And, you know, just my question is to Xcel or to Hever, you know, it's been talked about that, you know, we talk about increasing electric rates, more expensive electric rates. But, you know, I've heard talk that over 100,000 acres of solar are in the plans through Xcel's energy projects here in the Midwest. Is that correct?
Ms. Mandich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I don't have clear data on the actual acreage that this plan may account for. I think I would just note, however, that you know any future plan that we need to examine to serve customers going forward is going to have some type of impact. So if it wasn't renewables being added, it would be some other type of resource, and that would have an environmental and a cost impact on customers as well. And so we do try to take all of that into account when we do our resource planning. To the question about the potential environmental impacts that are kind of broader and things that we may not consider in the actual cost optimization of the plan, the commission actually did address that in their hearing. There was a really interesting conversation about sort of life cycle emissions accounting, and they did order us to examine that in our next resource plan, so you can stay tuned for that. I would just note that most respected research on the subject says that even on a life cycle basis, nuclear, wind, and solar are the lowest impact resources that we have available to us.
Representative Swasinski, do you have a quick follow-up so we can have time to get Representative Franzen?
Yeah, you know, I think the question, you know, kind of bears itself out. I believe that the number is true at 100,000 acres. And, you know, we look in the grocery store, you look on your utility bills, the cost of living life here in the Midwest is going up. And the cost of your grocery bill is going to come up at the same rate as your utility bill because we're taking land out of production. 100,000 acres, people. That should scare the living daylights out of you. It's one thing to put it in a desert where nothing can grow. And even environmentalists are fighting that expansion in the desert for the sake of turtles and whatever the heck else, or a lizard. You know, the idea that we'd be willing to put this stuff on good farmland, whether it's sandy, Representative Mecklen, or prime fan land, is absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And I think this body, and I think the commission and Xcel Energy needs to look long and hard at the long-term impacts on costs to people that cannot bear higher costs, because while you'd be able to, you know, have all the virtue signaling you want on this stuff, it's the people that least can afford it are the ones that are going to pay for it. And whether it's in the goods and services we buy or whether it's the bills that we pay. Thank you.
Representative Franzen, that we have time for one question and then we got to move ahead.
All right. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm just questioning what level of rate payer support did Excel have?
Ms. Mandich, if you understand the question.
Chair Long, Representative, we did have ratepayer advocates participate in our docket. Full participation as any other party would be able to, and a number of comments from the public. As I mentioned, we got over 8,000 comments from the public. I would say, you know, based on all of that input, the MPUC made the best decision they could, taking into account those concerns.
Thank you, Ms. Mandich. We're gonna have to move on.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Franzen,
could I know, but we're not given very much time on these bills, and I would like to just.
This is not a bill, Representative Franzen, this is just informational.
Well, we're trying to get to the bill. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Franzen. Thank you so much, Ms. Mandich, for joining us. Now we're going to be turning to the issue of interconnection. And this has been a topic that there's been a lot of discussion about in the off season and some activity at the Public Utilities Commission as well. So we have, I think, six individuals who are going to speak to this issue, and then we'll take some questions. If folks could please try to be brief so that we have time for questions, that would be appreciated. First, we have Elizabeth Swanson with us. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Swanson.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. I'm Elizabeth Swanson, and I live in Pine Island, Minnesota. I want to thank the chair and the members of the committee for allowing me to share my story about the rooftop solar system that we installed at our Pine Island home in 2021. Overall, we've been really happy with our decision to go solar. Our experience with the solar energy system that we chose and with Solar Connection, the local Rochester, Minnesota company who installed our system, has been overall very positive. However, those things that didn't go quite so well are directly related to the interconnection issues and utility company delays that we experienced. Very late in the process, the project approval process, Xcel Energy informed us that they would need to make utility upgrades before we could even begin to install the rooftop solar. So for these upgrades, they told us they would charge us $6,720.45 to install a new utility pole, a new transformer, and both new secondary and primary lines. Later, we learned that our other local utility providers charge closer to $1,400 for this type of upgrade. And in addition to that, three neighboring homes benefited from this electrical upgrade while we bore the full expense. The entire solar project was initially estimated to cost us around $30,000. So I think you can see why this additional cost would give us pause for reconsideration. We didn't have a choice in our utility provider for our solar project, nor were we able to influence Excel to reduce this charge after making multiple calls and exchanging emails with Excel representatives. So in the end, we did decide to go ahead with the solar project. We provided payment to Excel for these upgrades on April 12th. However, the upgrades were not completed until May 24th. And this delay was really disappointing to us because Solar Connection was ready to turn the switch on long before this date. So as I think about my learnings from our solar project, this is what I'd like to see happen differently for others when they consider these home solar installations. I'd like to request that public utilities charge equitable and fair fees for interconnection costs. I want to request that public utilities respond in a more timely manner to complete the utility work their companies require before consumers can even begin installation on their home solar systems. And I'd like to ensure that these interconnection costs don't present a cost to average citizens like my husband and I when we're considering solar projects, and that it doesn't present a barrier to companies, small businesses like Solar Connection, so they can grow their operations, hire more employees, and provide good paying jobs for our state. My husband and I understood going into this project that we would not likely see the full benefit of a 30-year solar panel. I'm 62, he's 71. However, we feel strongly that we want to invest our limited resources in ways that are in alignment with our personal value of supporting a more sustainable, more affordable, and a cleaner way of producing energy in our state. I hope this committee can help make this opportunity available to more Minnesotans by removing these barriers to investment. And I want to thank you for your time and attention today.
Thank you so much for being here, Ms. Swanson.
Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Don Doering. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, can hear you just fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for letting me speak today about my project. My name is Dawn Doering, and I live near Lindstrom, Minnesota, where I've lived for 24 years and have renovated a 125-year-old house, bringing it up to code in 2016. Part of this update included installing a solar array on my property. And I have experienced excellent service from Xcel during 22 of those 24 years. The issue came up in getting my solar project installed. In the fall of 2019, I applied to the Solar Rewards program for my project and was accepted in that December, and with the plan to be install my 5.2K array the following spring after ground thaw. That was April 2020 approximately for install, and it's now 2022, and I have no date for when my project will be able to be installed, and that's because of the interconnection issue. From what I understand, it is a concern about load reduction, and a 5.2K array, as you can imagine, is not that great of a load, and was approved by Xcel. But in trying to work forward, my installer went ahead and applied to see for a zero export function with Xcel, and this was denied by Xcel. And so we are still stuck in this queue that has not moved forward for 2 years. So briefly, I want to just say that as a ratepayer, I can reduce my load and am encouraged to reduce my load in Xcel in their bill for energy efficient appliances, or I could install more LED lights, but in trying to produce more some energy through solar, my project is stalled and it has nowhere to go, as far as I can tell. I have applied for an informal complaint through the PUC because of this continued stall, and it has cost me energy savings and incentive payments for which I have asked for compensation because of these delays, with nothing going forward. I have complete confidence that Xcel could find a solution to this issue. I do know that this has happened for others, and I would appreciate anything you could do to help resolve these issues as well. I think I would like to move ahead with my solar project, and I appreciate your time today in hearing about this concern.
Thank you so much, Ms. Doering, for being with us.
Thank you.
Next, we are hearing from Peter Teglund with Mencia. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long and members of the committee. My name is Peter Teglund, and I am the Director of Policy and Regulatory Affairs at the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association, or Mencia. Mencia is a 501c6 nonprofit trade association representing over 140 solar and storage companies that employ over 4,000 Minnesotans statewide. One of those member companies, Xcel Energy, is pivoting toward the grid of the future, committing an additional 2.5 gigawatts of new solar by 2030, the most of any Minnesota utility. Mencia and our members are grateful for Xcel's commitment to our industry, and we're excited to work with them to make possible this historic deployment of clean energy here in Minnesota. Xcel's vision for a generation mix that is more renewable and less centralized will both create good-paying jobs across the state and build a more resilient and cost-efficient grid. NCIA members recognize that the transition to a more distributed grid will require time and money. However, Minnesotans should not have to queue 15 to 20 years to have their solar projects connected, and grid upgrades should be transparent and fair. The decision from a recent hearing at the Public Utilities Commission should help, as policy changes over the coming year should make the interconnection process considerably faster and more equitable. Nonetheless, the grid of the future won't get here without some guidance from the legislature. Xcel's grid is getting denser with solar interconnections sooner than other Minnesota utilities, but others won't be far behind. The state has an opportunity to learn from Xcel's experiences as we move forward toward the grid of the 21st century. That grid will be more distributed, more responsive, and more democratic. Investments like those in Representative Lippert's bill will create that future. As the grid itself becomes more democratic, so too will the policies that shape it. To that end, Mencia would like to thank this committee for its leadership and its vision. We are committed to working with you, with Xcel, and with all Minnesota utilities to meet ambitious solar goals in a reasonable timeline and for reasonable costs. Thank you.
Mr. Tegel. Next, we will hear from Griffin Dooling with Blue Horizon Energy. Welcome back to the committee.
Chair Long, members of the committee, thank you for having me this morning. For the record, my name is Griffin Dooling. I'm the CEO of Blue Horizon Energy. We're based in Minnetonka, Minnesota, and since 2009, our company has been helping homeowners and small businesses across the state deploy clean energy solutions. Today, we operate in six states across the upper Midwest and an additional, depending on the year, 6 to 10 markets across the country for some of our national partners. I'll be speaking today in my personal capacity and the experience of our business. Peter has spoken very well on the position of Mencia. I also serve on the Mencia board for full transparency. But in our experience, you know, here at Blue Horizon, the challenges that some of the other testifiers have described with Xcel have been longstanding and frankly deteriorating over time. Just to give you a few examples here, in 2018, we began a project for one of Minnesota's largest lumber companies located in the western part of the state. They provide about 30% of the trusses for the Midwest in home building and construction, so they're a very key part of the economy. And they wanted to deploy solar energy to make their business more efficient and more sustainable for their customers and for their employees. This is an important value for the family that owned the company. In 2018, we designed and installed a solar array for that operation. It was constructed as permitted and as approved by Xcel and their engineers. And it took ultimately an additional 24 months from completion to get that system into a place where it was being appropriately credited from Xcel. So this was a significant amount of administrative burden and delay that was caused on this project. And I think it's important to note there that, again, that the project was installed as designed and approved by Xcel, and it ultimately still took Xcel several years to render the appropriate credits. In 2019 and 2020, we did a similarly sized project for a large logistics facility in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area. That project was delayed initially 7 months for some of the grid upgrades that some of the other testifiers have described. In this particular situation, those upgrades were to transformer equipment on the customer property that the customer had paid for. So the customer paid, I think, around $35,000 for upgrades, and then it still took Xcel 6 to 7 months to install those upgrades. Once the upgrades were installed, there was an additional 6 to 8 months of delays for testing and repeated testing that ultimately cost our company over $100,000 in direct costs and cost our customer tens of thousands of dollars in lost energy production, working through many, many administrative issues with Xcel. And again, that was a project that had been designed, approved, and installed as approved by Xcel. So this was not a matter of deviating from the design. We did exactly what Xcel said we could do, and it still resulted in over $100,000 of additional costs for us, tens of thousands of dollars in delays and lost energy production for our customer, and you know, a significant amount of frustration overall. And those stories are mirrored across the state. We have many, many customers that are in a similar situation to Ms. Swanson and Ms. Storing, where they would like to deploy solar energy or clean energy in their operations. They have gone through the process to get approved for various incentive programs with Xcel, and they now simply cannot get an answer to when their project will be allowed to interconnect and become operational. And that's very frustrating for us as an industry. That's very frustrating for us as a business. And ultimately, it's very expensive for our customers. And I think one piece of perspective here that's important to note is, you know, we've talked a lot about the importance of these projects from a climate impact standpoint and progressing some of the clean energy goals the state has. But beyond that sustainability focus, these are very real business challenges for the state. You know, you look at a business like ours that employs 45 people, you know, $100,000 in additional cost unexpected on a project, like we talked about for the logistics facility, is an extremely large unexpected cost for us to have to deal with. And it's, you know, one or two employees that we can't hire and employ in the state to grow the business. But when you also look at this through the lens of our customers, we work with customers in Minnesota and across the country, and increasingly are seeing investment decisions for these customers driven by the energy environment in which they're going to be operating. Just recently, we had a customer that chose to locate a manufacturing facility in an entirely different state because there was no path to deploy clean energy in a time-efficient fashion, and deploying that project in Minnesota would set back their sustainability goals. So this is really a challenge that's restricting business investment and frankly making the state less attractive to companies that want to stay here and grow or come here and grow. And so it's very important that we resolve these challenges. And the final note that I'll add, and I know I'm getting close to the end of our time here, is that other utilities in other states across the country have successfully deployed solar, successfully reached higher penetration of solar, significantly higher penetration of solar than Minnesota has, without these sorts of delays and additional expenses. So this is a challenge that can be surmounted and can be addressed. And frankly, it just is going to require the will of the legislature, the people, and also the public utilities to focus on this issue, make it a priority, and ultimately advance solutions. It's something that others have done, and hopefully we can continue to move down that path as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dooley. Next, we'll hear from David Schaefer with Novel Energy Solutions.
My name is David Schaefer, and I am the Policy Director for Novel Energy Solutions. Novel Energy Solutions is a Minnesota solar company founded in 2012, and we employ roughly 175 people. Based on the number of applications listed on Xcel's online queue, we are the biggest active community solar developer in Minnesota. We appreciate the opportunity to speak today. We believe that the recent Minnesota Public Utilities Commission order will help improve the interconnection process. We already know it won't go far enough. To evidence this, I'd like to share our experience recently. In August of this year, we filed a request with the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission to investigate Xcel Energy for its interconnection practices. As part of that request, we put forward 57 different instances of Xcel interconnection delays from 2021 and 162 issues from 2020. While we had a high volume of issues, the severity of the issues was relatively low. However, after we filed our investigation request, they ramped up in severity. Since August, we've had multiple instances of Xcel threatening to disconnect our gardens unless we take immediate corrective action on items seemingly of little consequence. And in some instances, they've shut us off. We've had our PTO pushed on three projects ranging from a couple weeks to 5 months. We've had six projects shut off for planned outages, and an average duration of those was for about 8 weeks. We have customers that did not receive the residential adder just getting the value of solar. And we've had other customers that received the adder but are getting the value of solar. We've been assessed multi-million dollar upgrade costs on projects that could easily go forward if Xcel would permit us certain equipment that they will probably approve later this year. When we asked for permission, they denied our requests. And I haven't even spoken about the biggest issue, which we just faced recently and are still working through. Xcel's permitted a certain type of switch gear since the beginning of the program. All of our gardens up until this point had the same design. This spring, we submitted a design change to Xcel through metering cut sheets. We were going to use the same switch gear on about 10 projects. In March, we ordered the parts because these components take a really long time to get here. They have huge lead times, and they're assembled off-site before we do on-site CSG construction work. At the May 18th SRC working group, they informed everybody that projects deemed complete on or before June 1, 2021 would be grandfathered in if their equipment was already in place. So we asked on one of our projects if we could go forward with the equipment we'd purchased already, and Xcel informed us that we could on that one. At this point, we believed our gardens would be grandfathered in. Then this fall, after our request for an investigation was made, all of the switchgear components were put together and many of the projects were already built, even a couple were turned on. Xcel informed us that they would not be grandfathered in. They shut off the gardens that were already energized, and they refused to energize the rest of the projects. Their gripe was essentially that while we told them about the design change via a cut sheet, we didn't file the specific material modification request in each project that they would have liked to see. And now it would be too late. We tried to find an amicable solution with them and threw out four different solutions. The only one they let us proceed with was the most expensive, time-consuming fix that we proposed. It will cost us roughly $50,000 per garden to fix, and it'll take 12 weeks to get the parts, install them, and get the gardens turned on, which is upsetting our financial partners. If we developers and installers don't file everything exactly how they want, then it costs us hundreds of thousands, or our gardens are shut off, and our financial partners get upset about liquidated damages they might face because of the delays. But if Xcel's late, like they've been on over 200 occasions with our project since 2020, nothing really happens. So I've testified before this committee many times, and I try hard not to be overly hyperbolic in my statements. When you combine these actions with the threats of Xcel, that they would retaliate potentially against us and shut off our gardens if we went forward with some of these things, it's hard to view this as anything other than them following up on the threat of retaliatory action for our investigation request or ratcheting up some sort of systemic desire to reduce non-utility owned solar. Both of these things are the things that the legislature should be concerned about and that the recent PUC order will not impact. The legislature needs to step up to help protect customer-owned solar and companies that install it and the citizens that those companies employ, or else these projects will face a death by 1,000 paper cuts. So with that, I'll conclude my time. Happy to stand with any questions, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. Next, we will hear from Rick Evans with Xcel Energy.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. You set quite a plate for me here, so I'll try to keep my remarks brief. What we're experiencing here, I think, can best be described as a clash of cultures. We are a public utility, and as a public utility, we own and operate a distribution grid. The planning for that grid, by the way, is done through an integrated distribution plan, every bit as exacting as the one that Ms. Mandich talked about for our generation resources. And the purpose of that grid is to provide reliable energy at the lowest possible cost to all of our customers. The grid was not built to allow private for-profit companies to interconnect and sell their product on the grid. They are, however, permitted to do that so long as the grid is able to accept their energy. While they're serving a small subset of our customers, they are allowed to use our system to the extent they can do so without increasing costs. That can occur either because our distribution grid is already able to accept their generation, or it can occur because a private developer is willing to pay, or in some cases, as we've heard this morning, a private homeowner is willing to pay for the impact that their portion of solar will have on the grid. In order for this to happen, the utility has to study each one of these projects to see what its impact will be on the distribution grid. These are engineering studies that determine whether or not the grid is currently capable of accepting that generation. Those studies are absolutely necessary if we are to provide our customers, which is, by the way, our main focus, with reliable energy, and they can be time consuming. It's worth noting that no other utility in Minnesota has this problem, as they recently testified to the Public Utilities Commission. This is exclusively an Xcel Energy problem, and there's no surprise about why it is. It is because we have had hundreds of private, for-profit, community solar garden developers apply for interconnection to our queue, because we are the only utility that is required to accept their generation, no questions asked. We are the only utility who is required to pay an extraordinarily high cost for that energy. Consequently, the queues in our system are extremely long, and each one of those projects needs to be studied independently to make sure that there's room for it on the system that we provide, again, primarily to serve all of our customers with reliable and low-cost energy. The situation, as others have noted, is currently the subject of a docket before the department, before the Public Utilities Commission, as they're trying to sort through how to fix the problem of hundreds of projects lining up to interconnect with our feeders. We believe the PUC has the expertise and the proper public role, because they are the ones responsible, along with Xcel Energy, to make sure that these projects do not impact negatively our customers' reliability and the low cost on our system. Now, the legislature also has a role, and I think that role primarily is in preventing this from happening in the future. We've spoken to this committee many times over the last really almost 10 years about the impact that unregulated, unlimited community solar gardens applications to our system are causing, not only in high cost to our customers, but now, as you can see, in the impact that they're having on the distribution grid. We are, for that purpose, we are sitting down with members of MNCEA and other representatives of the industry in order to see if we can design a community solar garden program in the future that does not have these cost impacts and does not have the impacts on our distribution grid. And I think we're making good progress on that, though I will admit it's slow and it's very, very complicated. We believe that the proper course for dealing with this problem, with this situation, is to design distributed generation projects that can come onto our system in a more organized and more orderly fashion, where the costs of the improvements that are required to allow them on the grid are carefully measured and fairly applied across the people who are causing those costs to be incurred, and not have those costs spread out over the bulk of our customers who get no benefit from the interconnection of these projects. I'll conclude my testimony, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Representative Bacon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to all the testifiers. I have a couple of questions. The first is for Mr. Tegland with MNCEA. You talked about the grid upgrades that need to happen, and that they should be, the costs of those upgrades should be fair and transparent. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you meant by that?
Sure. Thank you for the question, Representative Akam. As some of the testifiers have represented here today, sometimes the interconnection costs with Xcel Energy seem to be quite large. And for those testifiers that have experience installing solar in other utility test or utility territories, that expense seems to be higher. We've heard elsewhere, and this is represented in the docket at the Public Utilities Commission that Mr. Evans represented, that sometimes these costs, with the accounting for those costs, are not as transparent as we would like them to be. However, we do expect those costs to become more transparent in the future as new policies are rolled out from a recent decision that should be coming out in a written order maybe this week. So we should see some of those costs be shared among interconnection customers and only interconnection customers. As one of the testifiers represented earlier, the interconnection upgrades that that solar customers pay for often benefit their neighbors as well. Those transformers and those poles benefit those folks in their immediate neighborhood. And as a matter of physics, the electricity that they export from their rooftop solar powers their neighbors' homes when they're not using as much solar at home. So, you know, a lot of these folks are contributors to their neighbors and contributors to their grid. And I think will, as I said, be part of the grid of the future. MNCEA is really interested, though, in making those costs as transparent and as fair as possible. And I think we have some progress made at the commission recently. Thank you for your question.
Representative Akin.
Thank you, Mr. Tegland. That was helpful. I appreciate it. And my second question is for Mr. Evans with Xcel Energy. And like many of our speakers today, I have recently put solar on my home, and had some issues along the way. And it was anything but easy. And there were several delays in the approval process while waiting for multiple reviews and studies, as was talked about earlier and Mr. Evans referred to as well. The timeline becomes especially important when you're trying to take advantage of some of the time-sensitive incentives that can be helpful and make things economically make more sense. In the end, we were told that the cost for our project would be an additional $3,000 to upgrade the transformer to be able to accommodate our panels. And we were also told that we could avoid those costs if we agreed to a considerable reduction in the number of panels that we had planned to put on our roof. And I'll also note that while we have also at the same time been transitioning our home away from natural gas appliances, and so adding electrical use, as well as adding an electric car charger, and doing that, we never got any charges for need for increased capacity of the transformer. And so I'm not an electrical engineer, but it feels as though when customers want to use more electricity, they aren't penalized, but when they want to make their own electricity, they are. So Mr. Evans, I recognize that Xcel Energy is the only utility that does community solar gardens, and I appreciate that there's some differences there. But when we're talking about rooftop solar and residential, what can we be doing to shorten this process and remove the delays for homeowners and businesses so that we can encourage more rooftop and actually attain our greenhouse gas emission goals?
Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Akam. Of course, first of all, I'm not an electrical engineer either, I can't really answer the engineering question. I can tell you that I don't believe that our engineers are manipulating the system so that adding more load is less problematic than adding more generation. I will say, however, that as a public utility, we are built to serve our customers' load. We are not built to allow others to put energy on our system. That is allowed under the rules that we have and under the procedures we have. But again, it's a little bit of the clash of cultures here. Our job is to provide you with all the energy you need, and that's what we focus our attention on. The fact that others want to put energy on our system is allowed, and we have processes to do that, but it's not our fundamental purpose to provide a market for other people to sell energy over our wires. What I will tell you is, in terms of how we never had this problem, and I don't believe other utilities have this problem, because of the hundreds of community solar gardens that are filling up the queue. And we deal with those on a first come, first serve basis. So you might have 10 solar gardens in front of you in line. You might have 20 solar gardens in front of you in line. I suppose there could be a system where rooftop systems would jump at the head of the line so that they aren't waiting behind these larger projects. I mean, there's a number of ways I suppose we could handle this to the benefit of the rooftop installer, but the way that's been chosen and that's been approved through the Public Utilities Commission is first come, first serve. So it all depends on where you are in line. And unfortunately, if you're an Xcel Energy customer, chances are you're in line behind dozens of solar gardens that are waiting to apply to a grid that was not designed to accommodate that kind of energy, because it's not our principal function. Our function is to provide energy to our customers reliably and at a low cost. And so that doesn't mean it's not a problem. We're going to have to work this out, and we're working very hard to do that. But we have to keep in mind our priorities, and our priorities are reliable, low cost service to our customers.
Representative Akam, quickly.
Yes, I'm sorry, very quickly. I will just say that rooftop solar arrays are sized so that they cannot produce so much electricity. So it isn't as though rooftop solar is providing a ton of energy for you to put onto your system. That's not how it's designed. It's designed for homeowners to be using. So I appreciate the comments, though.
And Representative, I do recognize that, but I'm no electrical engineer, but your system will feed back on our system from time to time, and when that happens, it can cause bad things to happen. And that's why it has to be studied.
We have 5 minutes and three questions. So if we could try to move quickly so we get to everybody. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. My question will be quick. It's for Mr. Evans. Mr. Evans, tell me whether I'm assessing this right. I mean, basically, you got hundreds of these contractors out there. They're reducing your generating their own electricity. At the same time, you have costs associated with that. You're not set up with it as far as the grid. You're trying to provide low-cost, reliable electricity. And the result is that a lot of these costs are going to be shifted onto the ratepayers who don't have solar. Is that a correct scenario? Is that, I mean, I see you're in a dilemma or a quagmire that it's a no-win situation. Tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen. Well, I think I heard Mr. Teaglin say, and I appreciate and agree that, you know, the cost should be borne by those who are both causing the cost to be incurred and who are benefiting from that cost. So I don't think that anyone is proposing, at least that I've heard today, that we actually shift costs of interconnection onto our customers, which would be grossly unfair to our customers. So that's not my concern in this discussion. And so I think there are costs that are incurred on our customers because of some of these solar programs, and that's what we're trying to deal with in our discussions. But it's not been a situation where, these costs for upgrading the distribution grid are being shifted onto our customers.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this question is for Mr. Evans. And I know this is a little bit, like he said numerous times, he's not an electrical engineer. I have a little more work background. I'm not an electrician by any means. But if I was to put or invest in equipment that used like three-phase energy power, and it required me to drop a new line from my access point, is there any programs that where the state or any subsidies would pay for that to benefit me to create something where I can have like some kind of benefit from?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, I'm not fully familiar with the extent of this, but there are times that customers seek upgrades to their service where we do charge them for the upgrade because it's to their benefit and does not benefit the rest of our customers. I don't know the extent of that. I mean, just to give you a very quick example that's easy, we have communities that ask us to underground our distribution systems within their communities. And we're happy to do that, but we do ask those communities to pay for it themselves because it's of no benefit to the rest of our customers except those in that community. So there are programs where the cost of added service, if you will, or enhanced service are shifted to the customer that benefits from it.
Representative Swazinski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just if wanted to talk to a question to Mr. Evans, and the question is, if these folks that want to put solar on would come up with a plan that didn't feed electricity back into the grid, would they have to apply and have to go through engineering? Like if they just simply put rooftop solar on and when it wasn't, the sun wasn't shining, or if it was shining, they weren't using it, it just would just run a heater or something in their home and wouldn't put electricity back in the line. Would they need to have engineering done and have the same time delays?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure I know the answer to that question, but let me dig that up for you and I will let you know.
Representative Swazinski, any follow-up for me?
And just in general, I think, we've heard many times, it sounds like there's hundreds and hundreds of solar gardens kind of in the queue. And if you figure each solar garden, 7 acres approximately, that's over 1,000 acres of good prime farmland that I'm sure is getting gobbled up someplace in the state. And displacing cheaper industrial solar. So that is no benefit to the ratepayers in the state of Minnesota, and especially those folks, especially poor people in Xcel territory.
Well, thanks for this discussion, members. We're going to have to move on to Representative Lippert's bill. I'll just note that we will certainly return to the community solar issue, but a number of the individuals who presented today were individual homeowners looking to put small systems on their roof and facing some really long delays and high costs. And so that is a challenge that I think we should be trying to address. And I'm glad that that conversation is happening at the Public Utilities Commission. And we now have Representative Lippert, who has a bill to address his community's interconnection challenges. Representative Lippert, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I move that House File 3222 be laid over for possible inclusion in the climate and energy omnibus.
Thank you so much, Representative Lippert. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So last session as well, we were hearing about interconnection fees. And we had a hearing where we shared that Northfield residents were being charged significant fees to connect new solar arrays to the grid, as we've been hearing earlier today. This bill provides a thorough response to this problem for the city of Northfield, and a model will provide a model for other communities in the state. So I'm going to begin by asking Dorothea Harassaway, a Northfield resident, to briefly share her story with the committee to set this conversation up.
Ms. Harassaway, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Yes, I'm Dorothea Harassaway, and I want to tell you that in April of 2020, we contracted with True North Solar to build a solar array for our house. True North was very reliable in setting everything up, submitted all required to Excel. In the meantime, we applied for a loan through Center for Energy and Environment. Over that entire year, Excel delayed the process several times, including at times when it was inappropriate to delay. True North tried to intervene several times to require Excel to properly move forward, to no avail. Finally, at the end of the year, when interest was due on our loan, but we had no commitment from Excel that the project could go through, we had to cancel the loan and we lost over $750. Finally, in February of 2021, almost a whole year later, we found out that due to the small solar array, Excel was going to charge us $9,000 to upgrade our line. Our array would be an 11 kVA. We already have here on our farm a 15 kVA line, but Excel insisted on charging us to upgrade to a 25 kVA line. Since then, we've heard that Excel is charging people all over Northfield between $3,000 to $16,000 to put solar at their houses. It's so bad around here now that solar developers don't even want any Northfield customers because it takes so long to get everything lined up. And at the last minute, Excel comes up with these enormous extra charges. I heard an Excel engineer in his presentation to Northfield's Environmental Quality Commission about the challenges for individual solar in Northfield actually admit that Excel doesn't want any more solar in Northfield. And I think that's really wrong for Excel to get in the way of renewable energy the way they are. And then years ago, when the law was first passed requiring Excel to meet a higher percentage of renewable energy by 2020, our farm was approached by several community solar garden companies. We did agree to install 2 5-megawatts and later another 3-megawatt solar garden on our farm. At that time, Excel put in so many delays and so many roadblocks, it took 3 years for the construction to be able to begin. Again, these were inappropriate delays as we met every requirement thrown our way. So I urge you to find solutions for homeowners who want to include solar renewable energy and for solutions for homeowners who have been charged in what I believe are inappropriate and extremely expensive ways to go ahead out of their commitments to climate change. Sometimes they do anyway because of their commitment, and sometimes it's just too much and they can't. So I believe these homeowners should be supported. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. Representative Lippert, would you like to introduce your testifier, sir?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll say just a little bit about the bill beforehand. Ms. Harassaway summarizes much of what's been happening in Northfield, and we want to overcome these obstacles in getting renewable energy to the grid and doing that quickly and affordably. And ultimately in Northfield, the grid needs to be modernized. When I talked with PUC Commissioner John Tuma, who lives in the Northfield area, about the interconnection issue, he told me we need to move from a dumb grid to a smart one, that we need to move to transition from a grid where power only moves in one direction from source of generation to the point of consumption to a grid where power can come in from distributed sources and go to the places where it's needed most. So to create a smarter grid or to modernize it, we need to invest in software, energy storage, smart meters, and more. This is the real solution to the interconnection challenges that we're facing in Northfield and that other communities are facing too or will soon face. The city of Northfield has been working with Nokomis Energy on a plan for a grid modernization pilot project or a distributed energy resource management system or DERMS project. We think this project is a good fit for the renewable development account. We're asking for $4.5 million for this project. We believe we can demonstrate to other communities what's needed to modernize the grid as more and more distributed energy is added across the state of Minnesota. So with me to say more is Julian White and Brendan Dillon from Nokomis Energy.
Welcome to the committee, Julian White.
Thanks, Representative Lippert, Chair Long.
Mr. Dillon, go ahead.
No worries. Yeah, I'm gonna attempt to share some slides here, so bear with me. So as Representative Lippert explained, we've been working with the city of Northfield and many of its large energy consumers to understand the issues that they're facing today and to come up with a solution. I think, you know, Mr. Evans summarized this very well in talking about the design of the grid. It's just inherently not designed to achieve a lot of the goals that our communities, our individuals, our businesses have when it comes to energy. And so we need to think about that design again. And so what we're proposing is to deploy a distributed energy resource management system. And so what I want to do is just walk you through kind of the transition of the distribution grid from what we'll call the traditional distribution grid, which is what Mr. Evans was talking about, a one-way flow of electricity from the transmission grid where our large centralized power plants are located, through a distribution substation and out via feeders to the electricity consumers. So this image is indicative of many Minnesota communities today that are served by a single substation and typically two or three or four feeders. So when you think about cities like Northfield, like Faribault, like Winona, this is the electrical system that is set up today. But over the last few years, what we've seen is a number of distributed energy resources, namely solar, wind, some storage systems starting to get deployed on the distribution grid. And this has caused some of the challenges that we're seeing today where a distribution grid designed to have a one-way flow of electricity is now trying to operate in this two-way flow of electricity, but we haven't yet actually implemented the designs necessary to do that effectively. And what we'll see is, as we continue to build out the distributed energy resources, we really need to deploy simple control systems at each of these major nodes. And so what we're proposing to do is to do an engineering study of the Northfield distribution grid to evaluate where is best to deploy these nodes. And these nodes are basically a combination of a sensor and a control device that can collect data on exactly what's happening on that point of the grid, and then control either the load, the generation, or the storage that it's attached to optimize the functionality of the grid. You can think about this, you know, a lot of co-ops and municipal utilities over the years have deployed demand response programs where they'll put a device on a hot water heater or another appliance to be able to turn that up or down in response to conditions on the grid. You know, that's something where, you know, the very similar concept we're proposing to apply to the entire grid, where by combining the generation with the load in real time, you can actually manage the grid more effectively. If we look at some of the benefits, you know, one of the main benefits that we'll have is we'll just better understand how our grid is actually operating in real time. So when you think about, you know, new load coming onto the grid as electric vehicle charging or home electrification starts to ramp up, you'll actually be able to see that on the grid and be able to plan ahead for issues that are coming on. So right now, you know, in terms of a lot of the interconnection challenges that are happening, the near-term solution that Xcel is proposing is to basically expand the engineering margins that they're going to apply to interconnection studies to reduce the capacity on the grid so that we have more margin for this unpredictable future that we're going to see. But if we were to actually know in real time what's happening on the grid, we could actually apply, you know, better engineering judgment when it comes to resolving those issues, as well as be able to actually propose where distribution upgrades are needed. Where do we need larger wires? Where do we need larger transformers as the load and generation starts to get deployed onto the grid? And when it comes to the customer, you know, grid outages will be easier to prevent, diagnose, and fix. We'll see them coming. And when they happen, we'll be able to know right where they've happened and be able to send crews out immediately to fix those. And then a bit to Representative Swazinski's question about our customers who aren't exporting energy onto the grid, are they required to be studied? The answer to that is yes. We've worked with a number of customers who have proposed systems that are non-export systems, meaning they will only service energy consumption on their side of the Xcel meter or any utilities meter. And they are required to go through an engineering study. And in some cases, they aren't being allowed to connect to the grid due to the capacity that exists on the grid. By having an active management solution, you would be able to monitor a customer's energy consumption and generation such that they wouldn't export to the grid, they wouldn't impact the other customers on the grid, and you could actually deploy what are called flexible interconnection solutions. And the last part is, you know, for the customer experience is the interconnection process will be faster, more accurate. The data will be available in real time. We won't have to go search for data that may be months or years old. We'll have it right in front of us. We'll be able to process these applications much faster. And then the last part is really about kind of this overall grid modernization effort that's undergoing, is to make better use of the infrastructure that we have today. So we're not making, you know, large infrastructure investments ahead of what's going to come in the future. I just want to touch on, you know, a lot of what Xcel we Dylan, see them doing in their IDP.
So wrap up because we have about one more minute before perfect. We have to.
I just want to applaud Xcel for a lot of the thinking that's going into, you know, grid modernization. And we think this proposal aligns very well with that, to use, you know, a pilot project to show what can happen to solve problems in communities across Minnesota. So thank you all for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Dillon. Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we can move to questions or other comments.
Okay, great. At this point. I think we have two individuals who've signed up to testify. First, we have Ben Martig from Northfield. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair, members of the commission. I'm just here to voice support for the city of Northfield. Obviously, we brought in smart partners to help advance our climate action goals to be 100% carbon-free electricity by 2030 and 100% carbon-free community by 2040. We can't do it alone. We need your help in order to advance these goals. Again, we've worked on some strategic partners with Nokomis Energy and others. And we also think we can be a model for others across the state as we learn more about this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And if you wouldn't mind just stating your name and a title for the record.
Sorry, Ben Martig, City Administrator of Northfield.
Thank you so much, Mr. Martig. And then Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to cut short my remarks. You know, first of all, we're very much interested in pilot projects that will help us address the problem and the situation we've been talking about today. We've recently done some similar work with the city of Minneapolis. I'll suggest, however, that this bill doesn't quite have it right. It refers to Northfield's electricity grid. In fact, Northfield doesn't have an electricity grid. Xcel Energy has an electricity grid. It's private property. We own it. We operate it. We're responsible to our customers for what happens on it. There seems to be a gap here between, you know, what's being proposed and who actually owns the system that is being proposed to be worked on. You know, we're not even mentioned in the legislation. The Public Utilities Commission, which regulates our investments in the distribution grid, is not even mentioned in the legislation. This doesn't address who would have responsibility or liability if something goes wrong, if the lights go out. I doubt whether anyone's going to call Nokomis Energy. I suspect they're going to call Xcel Energy. So there's a lot of questions about how one works on a grid that they don't own in a highly regulated situation like we're in. I would also suggest that there are a lot of communities that might want to apply for a grant. You know, there's a reason we have grant application processes, because we can define the scope of the project, we can define a budget, we can look at the qualifications of the people doing the work, we can see how the progress would be measured, how the money would be accounted for, and essentially be able to supervise the grant so we understood. And that could happen through a competitive grant process or perhaps just by Northfield submitting some sort of a grant process to the RDA so that there's some greater clarity. Interconnection situation in Northfield is complicated by an enormous amount of distributed generation. Perhaps the study ought to study how much distributed generation is maximal. How much is, you know, it's not like it's unlimited. Maybe at some point you're better off getting utility scale solar than increasing the distributed generation. So, you know, I'd suggest that a pilot project either in Northfield or some other community is not a bad idea, but I think a lot of work needs to be done to make sure that it's a project that actually serves the purpose of the legislature in developing this public policy. And I'll leave it with that. Thank you.
Mr. Evans, I'll just note in the bill that the grant is to the city of Northfield and not to an individual developer. Questions, Representative?
Chair, I mean, that actually creates another problem because the city of Northfield is not going to be doing the work. And I'm not sure that they're, I mean, what are they qualified to do this? I don't, and how are they going to be held accountable? And is the city of Northfield going to get called when the lights go out or is Xcel Energy? So it just,
that's a fair point, Mr. Evans. I was just pointing out that it's not, it sounded from your testimony that you were suggesting it was to an individual developer, which it's not in the bill. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to all the testifiers. I just had a question in the last few minutes here for Mr. Dillon. I'm just wondering about a community like Northfield and the project, the view that you've shown us. What are the first steps that you take to look at that market and understand what the first needs are? How do you determine that and what might they be, please?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Long. The first step is to build an accurate model of the distribution grid in Northfield. So there is some information that is available that we can use to actually model the grid, you know, the sizes of wires, the locations of transformers and things. A lot of that, as Mr. Evans pointed out, will require working with Xcel Energy. And that's a big part of what we're proposing to do is actually work with Xcel Energy to deploy this system. But you have to model the grid accurately, and then based on that, decide what you're actually going to deploy onto the system in order to control it. And that model that you build lives on. It becomes the way that you continue to plan and deploy assets onto the distribution grid so that you're managing it effectively.
Well, another question, please.
Representative Bierman.
Just wondering if there are any of these DERM systems in existence now in Minnesota.
Mr. Dillon.
I'm not, yeah.
Mr. Dillon, go ahead. Oh, Mr. White. We're not getting audio, Mr. White. And if you could introduce yourself for the record.
His audio may not be working, so I'll jump
okay,
in there.
Mr. Dillon.
So in the sort of scope and configuration that we're proposing, there isn't one in Minnesota. They have been deployed, you know, across the country and globally. But really, the same technologies, the same concept has been deployed in Minnesota, like I said, to control different devices on the grid. Xcel has deployed devices like this on their own grid to solve kind of acute problems that they've run into. So this wouldn't be a completely novel deployment in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have time for just one more question, Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Chair Long, and actually this might be for you, quite honestly. So I've heard a lot about all the challenges getting this power in and out of each of these homes. I know Tesla's making like backup batteries for wall pockets that can easily become a storage situation. And if you have solar panels that are charging those batteries, why can we do the same thing we do with like backup generation for whole home generators? And the homeowner that chooses to do this just pays for all that, and it never has to go back into the grid. Why is this not an option that we could actually implement and go down that path? Unless maybe Brandon actually would know more about that, because that way we don't need to backfeed the lines. And if nobody understands, one thing I do know, if you use too small of a cord for too much power draw, it starts on fire. So I think that there could be something to be talked about here. And maybe, Chair Long, you could actually answer that.
I think I'll defer to Mr. Dillon. I think he'd be a more technical expert than I. Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, I'll do my best here. That's certainly, you know, a solution that is viable and that would be supported by this distributed energy resource management system that would be deployed. Right now, I'm not aware of utilities in Minnesota that allow you to basically disconnect from the grid for short periods of time while you generate your own electricity. You're either connected to the grid or you're not. And so that's what prevents a lot of what you're talking about of, you know, not backfeeding onto the grid. You would have to actually disconnect from the grid. But by deploying some of these devices where you can do that, now you can allow what, you know, we're calling flexible interconnections, where during times where you're fully servicing your load with on-site generation, you wouldn't be needing, you know, the services of the grid. And during times where, you know, you need electricity coming from the grid or you have excess electricity, you would be allowed to connect to the grid.
Thank you, Mr. Dillon.
Just a quick follow-up. Chair Long.
We're over time, Representative Mecklen. We're laying this bill over. We'll come back to it if we move it. Representative Lippert removes his motion that House File 2333 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over. Thanks, everyone. The meeting is adjourned.